listening to a podcast from The National.
It was only ever going to be a matter of time, and on Sunday evening, Manchester City were crowned Premier League champions following Manchester United's surprise defeat to West Brom. Records have already been broken, with even more on the horizon, as City size themselves up against the great teams of the Premier League era. In this week's Extra Time podcast, we'll be looking over City's title-winning season, the key players in games, and where, if possible, they can improve for next season. We'll also take some time to debate the shortlist for the PFA Player of the Year and Young Player of the Year awards. I'm your host, John Turner. Joining me in the studio this week, Steve Luckings.
Hello, mate.
And Graham Cagle.
Hey, John.
So, nothing surprising about City winning the Premier League title, but perhaps surprising that it came in the way it did.
I don't know for you, how you feel about it. It just feels like a massive anti-climax to the season.
Yeah.
You know, it was such a poor performance by United. I don't think any of us started the day expecting the season to be over on the Sunday. I'm sure Graham and whoever was late on the desk last night was not planning for that eventuality, were you, mate? But yeah, shock result. Probably interrupted Pep's golf swing on the golf course with Tommy Fleetwood. But yeah, for me, what we've witnessed over the course of a season, which is an absolutely swashbuckling Manchester City side, it just feels like a major, major anticlimax now to me.
No, I completely agree with you, Steve, on that. And you think of all the football they've played, it deserved to. It would be nice if they won it against Tottenham on Saturday.
No,
but in terms of the convincing to play against one of the top sides in England, and Tottenham, you know, a side who have, if you look back in the past, Tottenham have caused City trouble, and this is probably a compliment to Tottenham of how well City have raised their game. That's what they made Tottenham look ordinary on Saturday. So it's a real pity, because in a way, in hindsight now, looking at the pictures, it does look like they probably felt they'd done it on Saturday, because obviously United had to win both the games they had in midweek coming up. But in a way, I think I think United's failings kind of reminds us of why City are so good, because United had beaten City the previous week to stop them in the title then, and they managed to lose to West Brom. And the only other team to beat them in the league this season, Liverpool, when they did it, you'd have thought, right, beating the best team in the league, we can kick on from here. Lost to Swansea City. And then, funny enough, to West Bromwich Albion in the FA Cup. So,
but that, for me, just adds to the anticlimactic feel. The fact that United put in such a great performance to come back from two goals down against City the week before to win 3-2. Probably the best 45 minutes they've put in all season. And then they come up with a 90 minutes like that against the worst team in the division.
We'll get onto the kind of meat and bones of their title winning efforts, but the Pep Guardiola talking about it's still possible for them to blow it. What was all that about? I mean, there was, cited Real Madrid's collapse and the Golden State Warriors. I mean, what sort of ploy do you think he was trying?
Just covering his own tracks, just in case the impossible.
I mean, it was just never going to happen, though, was it? I mean, it was the fact that you were expecting United to win every game, City to essentially lose every game. It was near enough. That's what was required, and he. Oh, What would you think he was trying to do there? Was it just?
I think it's just trying to be a good winner, basically. Where you don't take anything for granted. Sure. But even though we all know they'd won it, it's still probably seen. It could be construed as being arrogant if you start talking about winning it before you've done it.
Do you think maybe he didn't look at the fixture list and see that he had Southampton on the final game of the season? Yeah,
Mark Hughes, 3 points, staying up. Still, like, I'd be nervous of that. Sorry, Sparky.
Amongst the many achievements this season, 18 straight wins and a record. It was 18, wasn't it? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I'll take your word for that.
Yeah.
sounds about right.
I checked it this morning, so I'm pretty sure it was 18. You just gave me a very quizzical look there, Graham. Yeah, doubt myself there. 18 straight wins. But along the way, there was obviously some, they absolutely slapped a lot of teams around, but there were some results along the way that they had to kind of grind their way through as well in that run and elsewhere in the season. What moments and results stood out for you that, were not so much turning points, but key results along the way that helped them?
I think for me, the defining, or at least the first one that jumps to mind, is the 1-0 win at Chelsea. Kevin De Bruyne's goal in that game. And, if we can cast our minds back that far, I can't even remember when the game was, but obviously, the gap wasn't as wide then, and Chelsea were well, as of today, no longer Premier League champions. But, you know, the going there and winning, given the results against Chelsea the previous season, that for me, you know, if we didn't know already then that they were on a massive, massive charge towards the title, that for me is what clicked in. I also think, was it against Brighton? Raheem Sterling scored in, was it something like the 7th minute?
Bournemouth.
Yeah, yeah. The 7th minute of time added on. Because, as you say, they knocked plenty of teams, you know, slapped them silly. You know, I think of Spurs in the 4-1 win. Was Watford, was it 6-0?
Yeah.
And it's very easy to forget that they beat Liverpool 5-0 as well in their first meeting of the season. But you know, we always say, don't we, like the mark of a real champion side is being able to grind out results. And they did that actually on plenty of occasions. And I think that's ultimately what won through for them.
Yeah, I agree, Steve, because they started the season a little bit slowly. And I said, they got a point against Everton in the first home game of the season when they didn't play very well. It seems bizarre that sort of they were pushed so hard by Ronald Koeman's side when 2 months later Koeman was out.
And they trailed in that game as
well,
didn't
they? Yeah, they trailed for a long time.
Yeah.
And then they had this little dip sort of by their standards at the end of November where they needed another last-minute goal. I think it was from Raheem again to beat Southampton. And then they were trailing to West Ham at halftime.
Yep.
And it kind of showed they were more than flat-track bullies. They weren't just a sort of side who just pull teams apart. They had a bit of grit and steel about them. The other thing that always impressed me was sort of, it was almost like after that first international break in September, because obviously Liverpool fans will point until the day they die about Sadio Mane red card in that game, that sort of when before they kicked on to win 5-0. But you've still got to sometimes, you know, playing against him and can be tricky. But City absolutely demolished him, and then they went to Watford, as Steve mentioned, and won 6-0.
Were you there for that game?
Yes.
Yeah.
But the scary thing about that game, highlighted a number of things, was Watford didn't actually play badly. The scary thing was, but in a way, what was more impressive with City wasn't just what they did with ball, it's what they do off it. And that's been, as we kind of saw in the Chelsea game as well, it's the intensity, it's the work rate that Pep gets out of them. And because I don't know how hard he worked the players in the pre-season and what he had them doing, but they were so, so fit in terms of any time they didn't have the ball, they were closing down, making it. Like the thing that stood out was like one of Watford's best players this season has been Doucouré in midfield. And he was never given time on the ball. It was a case of, all right, we're not always going to get an interception off him, but we're going to make it difficult for you and make you make a difficult choice or make you have to make a hurried choice. And if you put pressure on players, they will make mistakes occasionally. And that's kind of how City work to a certain extent. And it will be interesting to see how the rest of the Premier League reacts to it and sort of evolves, because obviously sort of Klopp's high-intensity football with Liverpool, there's a little bit of that in there. And Liverpool have got obviously an amazing offensive line. That's possibly the only thing they're kind of missing, was like a Salah figure in terms of more of an offensive player. They've got lots of midfielders who can do things. And Sterling was kind of almost like that for them. But that would be the only thing sort of like that you felt that kind of undid them at the back, was being able to not deal with that kind of figure.
They didn't have to rely too much on luck this season. You know, sometimes champions will have to ride their luck at times. But
yeah.
I mean, they were so comprehensive. The only moment I can really think of is perhaps the goal to draw at Crystal Palace when they had
the last minute break that was missed.
I can't really think of any other standout incidents where you think, oh, they kind of rode their luck for a couple of weeks and, you know, jammed their way through. There wasn't really too many instances.
I think you're absolutely right. I think of the amount of times they've battered teams. I think even if you look at the Champions League semi-final, second leg against Liverpool, they lost the game. When they scored, the Sané goal that was ruled out, they could easily have put 4 or 5 goals past Liverpool there and then. And then it's a different story. And they did that to so many teams. You know, I think if we've mentioned the West Ham game, haven't we? I seem to remember Adrian coming in for Joe Hart. Well, obviously he came in for Joe Hart. Joe Hart was ineligible. And Adrian just had the game of his career. So, you know, City, they're on course, aren't they, to break 100 points. I mean, the goals they've scored already this season, that figure is only going to increase. It's going to be very easy for them to take their foot off the pedal because they've won the title. But I can't see them doing it. I still think they're going to, you know, potentially win them 5 games. You said, Greg, they don't play anyone below 13th now, do they?
Yeah, that's right.
Southampton, who I think are down, or I think they were down the moment they appointed Mark Hughes. But I think that's going to be a field day, a real celebration as well. And it's great to celebrate a great football team playing great football. One game, I cannot remember who it was against, De Bruyne, one of his many worldies that he scored this season. He had a shot, and him and Sané recycled the ball so quickly when the ball went out to the left-hand side. And I remember speaking to Richard Jolly about it. He was at the game. Might have been against Southampton. I might have that wrong. But the way they quickly, like a pack of wolves, were on the ball again, you know, basically going out for their throw. They don't give defences a chance to regroup. They're such an incredible side. I mean, where do we think they rank amongst championship winning teams in the Premier League?
If you take the season on its own, and because even earlier on in the season, people try and start comparing the City team to the Invincibles or vintage Ferguson teams or the early Mourinho Chelsea teams. Yeah, it's too early. But if you take this season in isolation, they're right up there.
Absolutely. For me, the best Premier League winning team, I think, was the first Arsenal double winning team. The 98 team of Bergkamp, Marc Overmars, Petit, Vieira. That team had everything. Power, pace, they were ugly to play against. That, for me, has been the best title winning team. But I think City have surpassed them. And still got 5 games to go.
You mentioned just now, Lux, about touched on the Champions League. Has that left the tiniest of marks? I mean, a 5-1 aggregate defeat in the quarterfinals of the Champions League, when at that point they were very well fancied to go on and at least reach the final, possibly go on and win the tournament. Has that left a bit of a mark on this season? What do you think?
I don't think you can talk about City without bringing into question what they achieve in the Champions League. There is no doubting why Pep Guardiola was hired, why the investment from Abu Dhabi has been so high, and it is to win the Champions League. And to exit at the quarterfinal stage to, admittedly, a very good Liverpool team who look very well set in Europe. Has it put a stain on it? No, I don't know about that. I think it's put a dampener on it somewhat. You know, they're indelibly linked, that, you know, how well you do in the Premier League has to be matched how well you do in the Champions League. Are the quarterfinals good enough? No, probably not. Obviously, he'll get the chance to go it again, but yeah, it's an aside, isn't it? It's something that will be mentioned, like, you know, as of course we're talking about it now. The fact that, yes, they've been so incredible in the Premier League, but again, that's not been matched in the Champions League.
It could be possibly a reality check for them as well, in terms of it just shows that for all the brilliance they've got, they are very human. Because that's twice at Anfield that Liverpool have run them ragged, because obviously it was 4-3 in the Premier League game, but it was 4-1 for a while. And there just seems to be these little moments when they got overwhelmed. And in a way, that might be handy for Pep at the end of the season when he goes and talks to the board and looks at where he wants to strengthen and sort of look at the options. Because I think the other thing he might want to think about is, it seems crazy to say about squad depth, but it did feel like if you look at some of the lineups he played, particularly in the League Cup in the early rounds, he didn't rotate maybe as much as I thought he would do, or as much during the season. And obviously it's a compliment, and there's a reason why City are now on target to break the points record. But Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, he was always very, very good at rotating his players and sort of making sure they got rest, even if they didn't think they needed it. And I know Andy Mitten, our European football correspondent, is convinced that Ronaldo has deliberately sort of not sort of, you know, being too deliberately sort of being lazy in earlier games, or sort of not lazy is the wrong word, but building himself up. But he's trying to peak in the second half of the season, and that's where you see the best sides do it. And I don't think City have faded off at all, but it's probably, in hindsight, City's really strong football was probably September, October.
Yeah.
And it might be a case of evolving and working out how do you peak from there, because I've got no doubt if that City side from September, early September, middle of September, when the side that thrashed Watford, thrashed Liverpool, thrashed Chelsea were playing in the Champions League now, I'm confident they would have got through, even with Sergio Aguero possibly missing, going on questionable taxi rides around Amsterdam at that time when he missed a couple of games, if you remember.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, I think
I think you've got to be able to trust a taxi driver. I don't know if I blame Sergio Aguero.
No.
I forgot about that.
I was thinking more about the trip, not the taxi driver.
Yeah. Completely forgot about that incident.
Yeah, a couple of broken ribs, wasn't it? Yeah. And again, Gabriel Jesus has missed large chunks of the season, hasn't he? And what a talent he is. What a talent. But
let's talk about that. Let's talk about the key players for this season. Obviously, quite a few of them are shortlisted already for all the various individual awards this year. Key names obviously stand out: Kevin De Bruyne, David Silva, again as always for Manchester City. But Edison, the goalkeeper, he's had a great season. Fernandinho, I mean, Guardiola absolutely loves him.
Yeah,
and Leroy Sané. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about him on the list as well. But what are the kind of names that stood out for you guys this season?
Well, I tell you what I think should be touched on is the improvements that Guardiola made to that squad. Now, you think of the team that finished the campaign last season, was it they finished fourth? He identified his key problem areas, which were in goal and his two fullback areas. He shipped out the four fullbacks that were on his books, relegated his goalkeeper, Claudio Bravo, that he'd signed from Barcelona. As you mentioned, brought in Edison, who, you know, I think we all almost made a little bit of fun of Pep about how much stock he put in a goalkeeper being able to play the ball, but having watched Edison all season, he could play in centre midfield. He's so comfortable on the ball. The balls he pings, diagonals and that, are, you know, they're worth for the entrance fee alone. And, you know, I think it's very easy to forget the impact that Benjamin Mendy had. You think he really only played like a month of the season, but he's phenomenal. I miss him. I hope he makes it back and is able to make the French World Cup squad, because he is a phenomenal player. You know, just a one-man tank rolling down the left-hand side. I think Kyle Walker has been an excellent addition. Yeah, again, he does what Mendy does on the opposite flank. And so I think Guardiola really needs to be applauded for that, first of all, for addressing City's shortcomings, spending big money on them, admittedly, but that's what he needed to do. He spent big money on big players, and they've delivered a Premier League title and a League Cup. I think it's very easy to forget they've already got one trophy in the cabinet already this season.
No, completely agree. The player that I was really impressed with, because obviously there's so many you could go through, but I think obviously the player's got to take some of the credit himself, but Raheem Sterling, I think it's been absolutely tremendous for him. And in a way, it's been, as we sort of said, City have had a bit of bad luck with the striking options, with the fact like they've had Aguero and Jesus both injured. And maybe that comes back to the point I was making earlier about the lack of rotation, the fact that he's not always being able to do rotation because he's had injuries that probably, and in fairness to Pep, he hasn't made that big a fuss of it. But you think of the sheer amount of goals Raheem's got, because I know it's more than 20, and you think this was a guy who wasn't actually getting in the squad, or, you know, actually, funny enough, as Richard Jolly's pointed out, one of his pieces, wasn't even making regular starts at the start of the season. He came off the bench in the Everton game to get the equaliser. And so I really think sort of that's an MVP, and it could be hugely encouraging for England this summer as well.
What's your thoughts on Sterling, John?
I think all the goals, it's ridiculous to say this, but when you score like 20 odd goals, it should be applauded 100%, definitely. But I think he's massively wasteful. I think there's so many flaws in his game. I mean, we were talking about it earlier, there's a moment in the Tottenham game that summed it up. Like, he missed an open goal, and then 3 minutes later, smashes in a rebound. I was like, that kind of sums up his season for me. I think I just don't think he's very dangerous on the ball. He doesn't really beat defenders anymore. But then he pops up and scores goals. But not in the kind of like Frank Lampard-y type way, where it was like time runs into the box. It was just like rebounds would fall to his feet and he'd smash him into empty nets. That was all I ever saw of Raheem Sterling this season.
I think I agree with you. I do think he's a wasteful player. But I don't think there is any denying the improvement he has made under Guardiola.
I think it's
18 Premier League goals he's got now, which, you know, for someone we're saying is not prolific enough or not clinical enough, that's still a hell of a return.
You think of the amount of chances they create in games, like when they beat Watford 6-0, I think it was 28 shots on goal.
That's FIFA stuff, isn't it?
It was ludicrous. And having been in that game, the funny thing about that did not feel like a 28 shots on target game. That felt like a...
We're still in this, lads.
I'll tell you what it is with Sterling. I think it's because I'm comparing him to the guy that's on the other flank. And I think I think Leroy Sané is just a cut above. Considering they're tasked with similar jobs, I think there's just absolutely no comparison. And to think that Sané wasn't even in the team at the start of the season before Mendy got injured.
You're right, yeah.
And he was being used almost as an impact player because Guardiola explained it, saying there's nothing wrong with Sané. It's just when you've got Mendy down one flank, you can't really have anyone in his way. So he was then playing a more kind of centralised other midfielder in there instead. And then when he got injured, Sané was unleashed, and he's just been absolutely incredible this season.
Yeah.
So where do City improve? Is there? I mean, he addressed centre half. He signed Laporte in January. He's made a quite unsubtle start, I suppose. But I mean,
he's been steady, unspectacular. Yeah,
exactly. But you know, he's only been there a couple of months. Where do you see? Is there anywhere that they improve, or do you see any of the players leaving?
I wonder about someone like Fabian Delph's future because, again, you know, we've touched on his performances this season. You know, someone you would describe as, you know, a good standard of Premier League player, a midfielder. Pep turned him into a pretty good standard of a Premier League left-back. Now, there were games where his lack of nous in the position was exposed, certainly. But, you know, I'm sure Fabian Delph, when he saw the amount of signings Guardiola was making, didn't expect to play the amount of games that he did play this season. Now, if we're thinking that, you know, Mendy, well, there's no other way of thinking about it. Mendy will be a starter next season when he is fit. What does that do to his position? Because I think he's another player who has improved under Pep. Will he be happy to take a more kind of sidelined role? Does he now think that, you know, I can become an integral part of another team? Who can anyone chase City down? I don't know. I wonder about players like that just kind of on the fringes. I don't know if there'll be massive personnel changes to a team that has been so dominant in the Premier League. I mean, I don't know really where you do improve, really. I think Fernandinho and De Bruyne are mainstays. Like you said, Sané. He seems quite happy to rotate Aguero and Gabriel Jesus. Maybe David Silva, again, who I think has had a phenomenal season. We were talking yesterday, weren't we, about, you know, just his presence in that team. You know, the conductor making it all tick. But I think De Bruyne is ready. He's been ready all season to take over that role. So I wonder if Silva, his place in the team becomes a little bit more diminished.
Or just maybe they manage his game time a bit more.
Yeah,
because
maybe
they're going to have another 60-odd game season next year probably, aren't they? So
and the key thing is, it's a World Cup summer as well, so they're not going to get the kind of breaks. Like, realistically, obviously, some of the players will be held back before they go on the big tours, but there's not going to be as much rest as there was last summer. So I do think squad rotation is going to be crucial next season, and sort of getting as much rest as possible. So a little bit more squad depth. Maybe if it is another striker, but maybe not a top-level striker, but it's something that gives them a little bit more options to, so that Guerrero and Jesus doesn't have to play in the League Cup in October, for instance, or in November.
And they've got the finances to go out and buy players if their rivals go out and do similar. So, it all looks very good for City. You know, like I said, massive congrats on winning the title, and I'm sure they will only go from strength to strength.
I was just going to ask, before we move topics, a really nice, really early prediction for next season. Before anyone's finished, massively premature.
Yeah.
Do they go and win it next season? Everything looks like it's set up for the start of a kind of dynasty, don't you think? That might be a little bit over the top, but what do you think?
No, it's interesting you say that, isn't it? Because I know the cameras were on Vincent Kompany's house yesterday, weren't they, for the final whistle of the United game. And it was reading some of his quotes saying, you know, it's not yet a dynasty because we've not won back-to-back titles. You think this is his third Premier League title with City. And he made the point, until we start doing it back-to-back, we can't call it a dynasty. But, I mean, you know, looking at them now, how do you close the gap? You go out and spend massive money and City match it. So, yeah, I'm gonna be bold and say City will win the league again next season.
Well done.
Neck on the line. All right, well, I'll try and be slightly bolder by saying they'll do it, but it'll be closer.
I think. Will they win the Champions League next year?
Well, that is the key challenge, isn't it? And I think Guardiola will recognise straight away that they need to go further than the quarterfinals again. Yeah. So, will they win it? No.
So we spent quite a lot of time talking about the merits of City and their players. They've got three players on the PFA shortlist. Obviously, De Bruyne, Leroy Sané and David Silva. And then on the young player as well, Leroy Sané and Raheem Sterling. Let's focus on the...
And Edison as well.
Edison. Completely missed that. let's focus on the main award. There's also Harry Kane, obviously Tottenham striker, and Liverpool forward or winger, or however you want to describe him, Mohamed Salah, and United goalkeeper David De Gea. Now, it's been an ongoing discussion, De Bruyne or Salah. Which way are you leaning?
Personally, have now edged towards Salah. I think he's form. He's goal scoring exploits. What he has achieved this season is simply breathtaking. And he's had to edge above De Bruyne for me. I don't know how you feel about it, Greg, but I just think, you know, they tend to award it more to goal scorers than creators, and I think that will probably do for Salah.
I'm in the same camp, I think. I think, what he's done has been amazing. When you think it's his first season in English football, and I know it's a phrase that's banded around because obviously it's football's football, but English football is more high intensity. You've got defenders who are willing to, you know, sort of put a foot in maybe more than other leagues and stuff, and he's really sort of hit the ground running. And I also think as well, possibly what might sort of help is when the players are looking at the vote, is like, would City have won the title without De Bruyne? And it's quite possible... they might not have been quite as good, but I think there's so much. I think City are sort of like, what might hurt their players' chance of winning these awards are, it was such a team effort.
Yeah, like they'll split the vote.
It will split. Well, there's no doubt if Salah, say, broke his leg in August and had missed most of the season, there's no way Liverpool would certainly not be in the Champions League semi-finals right now, and they would not be right on Man United's shoulder because he's been sensational. He's carried. Liverpool have got a great forward line with Mane and Firmino as well up there. And then when he's fit, Lallana can help out as well. But Salah's carried that offensive lineup all season.
My argument would be, though, fair enough, City would probably win the league without De Bruyne. But the fact they've won it so comprehensively and so in such an impressive way, he's been central to it. The fact that he's by far the best player in by far the best team.
Yes. Yeah.
It means that for me, he should win it.
Yeah,
goal scorers always.
Is it, I mean, like 40 goals.
Yeah, I mean that's
ludicrous. In a season, and you know, I'm only basing it on, you know, you think and Harry Kane, as you mentioned, and he's had a phenomenal season as well. Obviously, he brought up his 100th Premier League goal. Was it in February? And then you think back at not just focusing on Africa, but like if you think back at past Premier League legends like Drogba. To surpass like someone like that, a player of his stature's goal scoring exploits, obviously again still got games left to improve on that tally, and I'm sure he will. I think just how well they work as a front three as well, Firmino, Mane and Salah. I mean, the pace is terrifying. How do you deal with it? And I think if we take the games against Manchester City as well, I mean, obviously, City won the first game 5-0, but in the subsequent games, you know, Salah has been the difference maker in them games. So that's the only reason I would plump for him over De Bruyne. Certainly wouldn't argue with either one of them two, but as good as the other nominees would be. And David De Gea, I couldn't think when we were messaging about, you know, doing this podcast and who would be in it, I couldn't settle on a six. I couldn't split between Silva and Aguero as the third City player, and I couldn't think who the sixth would be. But David De Gea, now I think back over the course of his season, he has been absolutely phenomenal. I've always found it very hard to kind of split between him and say, Hugo Lloris, and maybe a little bit further back, Petr Cech. But this season, De Gea has moved up to another level. He's out on his own as the best goalkeeper on the planet, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Anyone on that's missing on the list that you'd have on there? Maybe Aguero, as you mentioned.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. That was, again, I don't know about you, Gray. I just couldn't. I thought City would have three players. I couldn't decide on the third player. I wonder if a couple of, you know, obviously it's voted for by, you know, their peers and their fellow professionals. I wonder if a few might have opted for Mesut Ozil. I wouldn't have. Don't think he deserves to be on that list ahead of any of them. But yeah, I mean, I think that list is pretty comprehensive. I don't think there's too many people upset about the final six.
No. Gray?
No, I agree completely. I think it highlights just what a great time it is in a way to be a football fan. I don't think there's a wrong answer to whether it's De Bruyne or Salah in that respect. I think they're both, whoever gets it will be a deserving champion in that respect. But it'll be a scary scenario if Salah doesn't get it and you think of how many goals he's got. But on the other hand, you think of how many assists De Bruyne's got. It'll be a scary scenario.
One thought that had just come to me, maybe Christian Eriksen could have squeezed in there. Not necessarily sure ahead of who, but I think Eriksen has had a terrific season for Spurs. But yeah, Son as well. He's had a great season. I think even again, I don't know if he would have made the final six, but I think Lukaku has improved this season on what he has. You know, I think a big criticism of him has been his stand-up game and his hold-up play. And I think that has improved this season. He has been scoring goals, but yeah, I don't think necessarily to edge any of the final six, but it's worth noting.
So young player of the year shortlist. And there's one bit of surprise on there, isn't there? Ryan Sessegnon at Fulham. So the first ever player, non-Premier League player to be shortlisted, I believe.
In the Premier League era, I think that's probably right. Yeah. I think I've probably got this horribly wrong, but...
So Harry Kane's on there again, Leroy Sané again, Edison, Raheem Sterling, Marcus Rashford, Ryan Sessegnon.
Yeah, and Sessegnon, I'm sure I bored you with this story plenty of times. When probably. I worked for a radio station in London, Fulham were very good to offer us very, very cheap season tickets. So a lot of us used to go down there every Saturday. And I love Craven Cottage. I love the club. It's the loveliest walk to a football ground you'll ever do. So I've got a real soft spot for them. And I have a very good friend of mine who still works there. And he told me at the start of the season, watch out for this kid, Sessegnon. Just been following him throughout the season. 17 goals for a left back. As a 17-year-old, I mean, it's a championship. But the championship is a hard division.
That's legitimate, yeah.
Yeah, to get out of it. And, I'm sure I'm not letting any great secrets out of the bag. Like, all the big clubs have been keeping tabs on him. So whether he stays at Fulham or he decides to make the jump, I think he would be best served doing a season at Fulham in the Premier League where he'll play every game. Those big clubs will obviously, you know, still be keeping tabs on him. But yeah, I mean, it's terrific news for him. It's great to see. Yeah, I'm sure we all remember a time when England couldn't produce one left back, let alone one who's 17 and can bang in goals as well. And yeah, as for the rest, it's great to see two goalkeepers in the list, De Gea and Edison. I think they've been definitely the best two goalkeepers in the league. And Edison has definitely brought a dimension to that City side that Guardiola wanted last season and constantly talked about. And, you know, I'll my end up ridiculed him about. But he has been the keeper that Guardiola was searching for.
Who's your pick then on that list?
On the young player?
Yeah.
I think Sané. I think... I don't think I'd argue if it was Harry Kane, but I think Sané. I think he's been brilliant.
Great.
I'd go with that completely. I think Sané's been sensational this season.
You?
I think it might be Harry Kane.
Again, for the goals, do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I'm like countering my argument for the main one. I think so. I think Harry Kane or I think he'll win the young player, or I reckon that's who I'd vote for.
It seems very weird to include him again.
Yeah,
on the young players list.
Doesn't it? Feels like he's been nominated obviously he's been nominated for years, but do you know what I mean? It feels like he's been on that list for a long time.
And you know, let's not discount it. He could still finish as the Premier League Golden Boot winner. But yeah, just and as I mentioned, he's already topped up 100 Premier League goals. Seems like he's been around for ages, but he's still a very young player. And you think, you know, players like that are only going to get better as well. So, it's great for the players to be nominated. It's great for their clubs as well. Yeah, but I think I will go for Salah and Sané to win.
Good stuff. All right, chaps. Well, that's all we've got time for this week. Thanks for stopping by the studio.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers, John.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts and on the National website at thenational.ae/sport. Thanks for listening.